Okay, now Chris is going to tell us about.
Thank you. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of our experiences. So I didn't want to provide a technical presentation in that sense. It's more experiential, what we've sort of found as we've gone along. And remarking in one of the breaks to Doug, it was interesting. I thought it was 3 years ago we were here looking at some of the blue sky stuff that now we are taking for granted, using and modifying our systems with. So from probably a developer's point of view, things don't happen often quickly enough and it's a resource limiting thing. But from an end user's point of view, it's really pleasing to see how far we have come compared to where we were aiming, and that's working quite well. And just looking across the room, I see a good body of people that have got a wide range of experience with the product, and it's, I'm a self-confessed sort of macro view file, if you like. I love the product. It's served us very well over many years, and it's really pleasing to see how it's growing and still is supported. So yeah, thanks to Brian for the venue again. It's great to be able to come and talk about that. I work for a company called Iluka Resources Limited. We are a mineral sands mining company, a small company, probably in the scheme of things. Worldwide, we have probably 1,000 employees, but that's sort of spread across the United States, the Eastern Seaboard, and in Western Australia. And really was formed from the merger of a couple of mineral sands companies. Westralian Sands, as we were known, we're based in Capel, a couple of hours south of, probably an hour and a half or so south of here. And I've been involved with that company for nearly 17 years and was involved in the sort of post-commissioning of their first MacroView system that went in there that Tony Watts was involved with. And so it was a version 2 system and pretty scary, really, compared to today's terms. But the heart and soul of that is still what we see today, and it's great to see leveraging technologies adding on top of what was still a very solid solid platform. Change is a funny thing. Talking about technology and this sort of box of tricks next to me, that first system that went into our plant was on an Olivetti 286 computer. A 386, and it had a 286 was its partner, and I think from memory they were about $4,500 at the time. It was sort of cutting edge stuff. And so the spectrum of change, the purchasing cycles do roll around very quickly. Compared to our traditional process control PLC and DCS systems, which are built for longevity, for a hardened kind of environment, and the life cycle of that is 10, 20 or more years. So we found ourselves at Iluka in I'm really only speaking about one site, which is our synthetic rutile plant number 2. We find ourselves in a situation where our PLC systems still very rugged, still very reliable, doing the job they were designed to do, running the plant and executing the code pretty faithfully. But there's an ever-widening gap in the technology of the computer systems, the operator interface, the underlying platform for allowing the operators to control and see that plant. It's a little bit like being on a parallel beam, and suddenly, one beam's fixed and isn't changing very quickly, but the architecture of the other is changing pretty rapidly. So you sort of find yourself getting closer. Your legs are getting stretched, and I wasn't built to do the splits. So some of the challenge that we face was we have a Square D PLC system, was a 10-base 2, a thin coax Ethernet comms peer-to-peer, and we built our MacroView system developed a driver based around a particular hardware card, a 3C509 combo card. Ran really nicely on some of the older architectures, still running today. The plants are still using that as we speak. But you go and try and buy one. And my brother's got a couple of computer stores in the Leading Edge sort of brand. And I happened to call into one of his shops one day, and there in the front of his shop was this is probably 3-4 years ago maybe, there was a $5 bucket of cards, bits and pieces that he had just from secondhand machines. And I spied in the corner was gold. There were half a dozen of these cars just sort of sitting there, and because they were so hard to acquire, I sort of said, hey, Kerry, give me those. So I grabbed them, and I've still got them, tested them, made sure they work. Because we recognise that things move on. You know, the technology changes, the speed of the network. If we talk to our IT department now of, you know, media speed compared to the gigabit Ethernet, they're just abhorrent that that we're using such archaic technology. But it's the basis of what the plants are running on. And I'm sure if I look around the room, you know, we've sort of all got those same challenges. So this particular model of network card quickly became an Achilles heel. Our IS&T department, God bless their souls, were sometimes we term them network Nazis, but we're all sort of trying to achieve the same sort of result, I guess, from a business point of view. And that thick line in the sand has become a, you know, a sort of a 0.2 mil pencil line about what's ours and what's theirs. And they came to the fore and helped us with some procurement of hardware and the purchasing cycle, the capital expenditure cycle of getting money to change systems, which is not always easy because we're not actually producing any more tons for the money that we're spending. So we went on a bit of a program of computer replacement. It was easy for systems that were running the Quantum Ethernet driver, talking to Modicon PLC, some of our other systems that had other drivers, but our legacy was this Cynet sort of Square D Ethernet driver running on this particular card. It's an ISA card, so it doesn't. You just can't go and buy now off the shelf this type of box that is supporting of that architecture. Doug, fortunately, and CSBP are using a particular motherboard that has proven itself, and we're not afraid of change. We sort of don't hold it at arm's length, but we change when we need to. Recognise that we've really had to look a little bit further down the road. What's the future going to hold if we can't find a replacement? So we went about that task and procured some motherboards and built some systems that would support this particular card, and that all sounded great. The initial testing we did was terrific until we sort of put them into production and put them on the network and saw that although the cards functioned as you would expect, not a problem there, they performed probably worse than in the older architecture machines that they were in previously. We're getting a lot of read, reply, timeout errors, and despite being able to modify the nap time and you know, a lot of those communication parameters, just not really happy with how they're running. So we actually didn't deploy one of the systems on that basis. We're still running an older model IBM system that you know, is running quite well. So we're stuck. We're in a bit of a bind. And in dealing with Sentient and sort of indirectly with Apollon, we decided to embark on trying to develop a driver that could be used to replace the Ethernet driver. And so that was the approach we took. We invested some money and some time. And over a period of time, it didn't happen overnight, although when we decided to go that way, it did actually happen fairly quickly. We were able to sort of help contribute to the new Simax driver that was advertised. And it meant, though, that we've been a Linux... we've only had one Linux system on site, which was a Historian. We've been a Unix, SCO Unix site for all of my time there, and it's like a pair of old jeans. They're pretty comfortable, and why do you change them? Just because baggy sort of trousers are in this year or stovepipes are in next year, or, you know, we just don't change for the sake of change. But that architecture or that system has really suited us well and supported our business well, but it was a bit of a more of a handful to try and write a driver to run. So with some help from Doug, of course, we embarked on setting up a Linux box using Fedora Core 4, and you know, the demonstration machine that we got down and played with was sort of very comfortable in a lot of the utilities. It's just like you know, all new software. It takes a little while to get to the different interface interaction, slightly different, but we sort of persevered with using Linux, and on the basis of the new driver running on Linux, we sort of embarked on that and set up a configuration machine that was really, first of all, just a test to see that it would work. We implemented the driver in a read-only mode, so there was as much testing as the guys could do in the lab with, you know, a small network. Very reluctant to just throw untested equipment onto a live network and sort of see the result, having seen a negative result of that in the past where things come crashing down, but we implemented the drive in a read-only mode and was very impressed to see that our cycle times for reads and writes were reduced from in the order of 10 to 15 seconds down to what we'd set as a demand time of 4 seconds. And to our great sort of delight, I guess, the system ran, read, updated at that rate. Our 6 second trends looked good. The demands on the processor were not overly high, and was really quite good. So on sort of having run that for a few days, we then implemented the drive in a read-write mode and essentially had a system in production that was able to interface with the plant, control the plant, and do all the functions that we would expect of it at that that cycle time. Has now been running for probably 2.5 months or so. Only time we've stopped it is to make changes or, you know, if we've needed to reconfigure, and really quite impressed. So it's what has become our Achilles heel is now removed. We're no longer limited by that particular network card as a limiting factor, and so we can take advantage of newer hardware, newer processors, and network cards and network speed that will still carry us forward. So I guess, in summing up, we've now sort of made a bit of a leap. We've sort of a bit of a change in direction, and we're able to take advantage of some of what we've been seeing as blue sky has really become the sky in which we're standing. We're not looking to the future. We're seeing that sort of right now, which is good. Still face some challenges, I guess. We are using the Finn client terminals. We've used some X-Window software for many years to provide desktop users the window into the plant rather than the on server. We don't use the VNC package per se for that, and that served us well. But one of the limitations we found was that the when we set the Linux box up, the firewall was enabled partially, and it blocked the rexec command, which the Thin Terminal client sort of used to generate that X-Window. So although we are sort of running Fedora Core 4, and I think they're 5 and up to 6 now, are we? We are still a step behind the game, and that's sometimes not a bad thing to sort of benefit from everyone else's wisdom. But we did find a small issue in being able to run rexec, but also there's a graphics problem, which fortunately we were able to solve. So we're learning. We're sort of, we're a small team supporting our own systems, which has stood us in very good stead. Looking to the future and still looking to the future of this product to serve us, which is really good. In contrasting probably the speed of change of hardware to the speed of change of software development, just in summing up, it's, as I said before, pleasing to see that we're aiming high, we're aiming to the future, we're aiming to support and enhance this product. I'd love to see the day when it was a real rival again for its competitor, and I could go to our management and say, look, we should be not using this other package but sort of fully supporting MacroView. We're not there yet, I don't think, but I do believe we're in an environment where the systems we have will be able to compete on a fairly equal foot and provide some of the what we see as people supporting the systems, and flashy graphics are great. Their flashy graphics are always great for selling a product, but to the guys that are running the plant, they're a nice to have. They've got to get the information in a timely manner. If our communications are robust, if we can present information in a good format, that's more important to whether it's a beveled edge or a very glossy looking graphic. But it certainly does help to use some of those strengths and use what we see, because we are very visual. I was on an aircraft flying back from Sydney yesterday and looked, and when the hostesses sort of pointed out the exits, there was no dialogue to speak of. And they pointed to the card in the back of the seat. You open it up and it tells you how to put the mask on. It tells you how to stick your head between your legs and kiss your bum goodbye if the plane's going down. It says you can shows you how to put on the jacket and pull the tabs and blow it up if you need to and blow your whistle without a written word of English. So by nature, many of us are very visual. We learn very visually. So if we have a visual interaction into the plants, that the information that we're trying to portray, more than a text, that's a very, very solid thing. And it was just in closing, probably the Visual Earth program caught my attention, because I thought, what a great way of actually representing the plan and looking into the plan and representing that to our control room and many users now that are actually accessing the systems for information. And probably what seems as, you know, maybe a nice thing to have, or, you know, you might not put much store in it, as an end user, suddenly it sort of starts the mind thinking, oh, we could use that, and that would appeal to a whole different set. So I guess in challenging our thinking, it's not all about only what we see as developers and supporters of the system. It's what will appeal, what will represent the process in a better way to the end users. That's always got to be in the forefront of our minds as well. So I'm happy to take questions if there are any. Experts by no means, but we're trying to support our own systems, trying to do that well, trying to support Doug and SynCon in providing a good service, and encourage anyone that's not on support to do the same. It's only as the product grows we get the support and get the resources that all of us struggle for, whether it's capital or personnel, and in the same way, support of the product will only come through our own collective wisdom, I guess, and through the guys that are developing and enhancing it. So I don't get paid for saying that, but Heineken is good this month. So yeah, if there's no questions, I'll... Yes?
I've got one quick question. You said that you were looking at sub-second, 4-second updates.
That was at a set rate, yeah. I haven't pushed it.
Have you ever tried to do better?
Not yet, but we did, by mistake.
We put it live, we did it by mistake. We were getting 1-second updates, but we were just concerned that might... because it's running two servers, it might detrimentally affect the other one. Yeah. And traditionally, they're happy with their mindset is 6 seconds trending. Yeah, I know, but it's. But I believe we believe the driver will be able to go down to 1 second of it.
Might have been VLC equipment might limit you too.
Yeah, it could did. Well be. Could the actual yeah. protocol is very, very fast, but we did. It's asynchronous, so you can specify a certain number of outstanding requests. Yeah. And I did have a scenario where. Did it on a Simax 400 Ethernet PLC, and the PLC locked up. It didn't handle the protocol correctly at that firmware version. So, you know, it's an entire system point of view. You have to look at the driver and the equipment you have.
I've got a question. Have you found, as a user, have you found a difference in... Because you're running the Linux server and the SCO servers on the same hardware architecture, aren't they?
No. Yes. Yes and no.
Is there a big speed difference between the SCO and the Linux server, or in terms of accessing data and stuff like that? Do you find there's any?
Well, the Linux server gives you more flexibility if you're building aspects, because it's so open source.
Yeah, but no, just in terms of bringing up trends, bringing up graphics.
We're not comparing apples with apples. I think the one server is... Don't want to get into the technical details, but one server is an IBM, it's only a 500 meg machine, so it's a dinosaur.
I thought one of them was the same architecture.
That's the other. But we're fully supportive of the direction we're taking, and really, really pleased to see that the group is growing more than it was a few years ago, and hopefully that'll continue, and we'll sort of get some good support and collaboration to. All work to enhance the product. So, thank you.
Thank you.